through Mississippi, March 28, 1974.
Not for attribution.
I guess what we're really interested in is where politics is in Mississippi and where it's going. We're also learning how it got to where it is, and I'm more or less familiar with the basic background. Your own background is what, politically?
My background, the whole thing.
Go ahead, summary.
Well,
go ahead.
I started out as a page in the house in Washington as a kid for a period of time for Representative Jamie Whitten. Then in 1954, when I was in college, I drove Jim Eastland, Senator Eastland, in the campaign, traveled with him. That was back during the day as well, before the advent of the airplane, and you stayed in the car pretty much, you know. Next time I drove an unsuccessful gubernatorial candidate, Paul Johnson, who later was elected governor. 59, I was elected, right out of law school, elected to the Mississippi House of Representatives. And my opponent withdrew right soon after the race got started, and I was elected without opposition and moved on into Paul Johnson's campaign for lieutenant governor. From there, I served in the House and also worked as an attorney for the Senate Judiciary Committee in Washington when the Mississippi House was not in session. I took a leave of absence up there. I was up there during the Kennedy administration. In 63, I was elected to the state Senate to serve 1 year. Paul Johnson was elected governor at the same time I was elected to the Senate. And after I served a year, he appointed me as a commissioner, the Workman's Compensation Commission in the state. I resigned from that in 67 to manage John Bell Williams' campaign. Successful campaign for governor. Then served for 3.5 years as the director of our state's Economic Development Agency, Agricultural and Industrial Board, Mississippi A&I Board. Then I was elected treasurer in 1971. And have served treasurer since.
That's quite a varied background.
Yeah.
During that period, what are the basic changes you've seen?
The greatest change has been the advent of the black vote. That's been the first change. I would say the second most significant change is the election of some Republicans and Republicans fielding candidates. Like when I first started in 1954 and 55 in politics in Mississippi, there were no Republican candidates for anything. It was purely a one-party state. That's been a significant change. Another significant change, I think, would be the relation of the Mississippi Democratic Party with the National Democratic Party, the problems we've had. And then there's been a great change in political campaign styles. Television has caused a change. When I started working in campaigns in 54 and 55, the old stump speeches were still in vogue. And as you know, I'm sure this was true all over the country, but especially true in the South, it was more than just the politicking. It was a source of entertainment for people. Today, you go to a political rally, and the only thing you see are candidates for other offices, their supporters handing out stuff, because you're competing with television now to entertain. I think it's really brought back, too, it's brought back more what I call touch politics, more one-on-one politics. A man today can see more people walking up and down a small rural town from store to store along the street in the 2 hours that he might spend at a political rally. He can see more people and request more people to vote for him than he can at a political gathering. Certainly he'll speak to more people who are uncommitted than he will at a political rally, because most political animals, you know, who are running for lesser offices, they pretty well have made up their own mind who they're going to vote for others. That certainly has been a change I've seen in the style of politics.
You see the trend continuing? That is more black voters, more GOP, more Republican candidates, changing campaign style?
I don't know. I've seen this with the Republicans. We've elected in the last, since 1960, we've elected three Republicans to the U.S. House. One was elected on the Goldwater's coattails back when he ran in 1964. Two were elected last year, 2 years ago. Their election was not so much on the coattails of Nixon Agnew, although I think that had an effect. The Republicans always seem to do better during a presidential year, because since 60, the Republican candidates have been more pleasing to the majority of white Mississippians. They've been more conservative. And it's really not been so much that people were for the Republican candidates, presidential candidates, as they were opposed to the Democratic. Most Mississippians, whether they're conservative or not, that's kind of misused down here. A lot of people, I think, equate conservatism to having the past racial feelings and being opposed to one worldism. I don't think Mississippi is economically that conservative.
So you don't see more Republicans getting elected?
Well, the two congressional candidates who got elected last 2 years ago, Trent Lott was elected down in our southernmost district. He had been the administrative assistant of Bill Carmel, Congressman Bill Carmel, who was a longtime member of the U.S. House of Representatives, chairman of the Rules Committee in the House. And he really got elected by Bill Carmel's Democratic organization, although Carmel himself stayed out of it. I think it was noteworthy that after Trent won he left Carmel's office in Washington. After he won the Democratic nomination, Carmel put him back on his staff in Washington, where he worked until the general election came along. I think that told a lot of people something.
After he won the Republican nomination.
Yeah, after he won the Republican. Then your other Republican.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Thad Cochran here in Jackson. Thad has very strong Democratic ties. Thad was my Hinds County campaign chairman when I was elected treasurer. He and I were fraternity brothers at Ole Miss in college. He was a little younger. We were very active in campaign politics. I brought Thad along. John Bell Williams, who had served in Congress for some 23 years from this district that Thad now represents, had a falling out with Thad's Democratic appointment of opposition when John Bell was governor. And Thad's opposition, Ellis Bodron, had been chairman of the Senate Finance Committee in the state Senate. They had a falling out, so John Bell threw all of his support behind Thad, which was significant. He'd been representing these people for 23 years out of the last 27. I think that was significant in the Republican
Did he do it openly as an endorsement, or just sort of quietly passing the word?
In Mississippi, there's very little open endorsement of other political leaders. He put a white line out in his office. He laid on the telephone. His office became a campaign headquarters for Thad. The last 3 weeks of the campaign, John Bell did little of anything other than on the telephone.
So you're saying that the Republicans that have been elected in the last 10 years or so basically relate to the fact that this coattails of the Republican presidential candidate and personality politics.
Right.
You really can't explain the party is getting any that much stronger.
That's right. Now, that's on the higher level. Mm-hmm. We have had a number of Republicans elected in municipal elections. Still a number. It's still a small minority of our municipal officers are Republicans, but we have several mayors in the state who are Republican. I would say generally, too, that was not because of party affiliation. That was a cult of the individual. The person himself had more support in his local community than the Democratic candidate. We have had several members of the state legislature. We've never had over two or three Republicans at any one time. Now, I don't know what effect the mess in Washington is going to have on the Republican Party in Mississippi. I did notice this. The people in Mississippi became defensive of the president in the Watergate mess. But I did notice when the income tax thing came along, I could see where a lot of people got off the bandwagon. Now,
and the grand jury indictments that further that effect of people getting off?
I haven't seen much, but when the people found that he didn't pay any income tax and make the kind of money he made and hear that they've been paying it, that in Mississippi, I think, from what I could hear, people talking had the biggest effect. Now, when it all comes out in Washington, when the committee, the House committee, comes out with its findings and reports to the House with a impeachment resolution, or they'll say vote not to impeach, I'm sure that other things will come out that haven't at this point. They could change the people's feelings. But people still equate Kennedy to McGovern, and they still say, well, by God, I'd rather have a crooked son of a bitch up there than have a communist. Now, that's the way a lot of folks in Mississippi talk, which in both counts is exaggeration, but.
What do you think it's going to take to bring the loyalists and the regulars together, or don't you think it's going to happen before 1976?
Oh, I think it will happen.
Before 1976?
I don't know if it will before 1976. I think a lot's going to have to do with what's going to happen this summer to midterm convention, whatever they call the thing. The real stumbling block to right now is the Democratic committeeman, well, not the Democratic committeeman either, because I think Charlie Evans is the Democratic committeeman, but it's the party chairman, Erin Henry, and the national committee woman, Pat Darien. They don't have any swing in Mississippi. Certainly Erin has more than Pat Darien. She can't produce any votes for anybody. And this is the only way she can hold on. This is giving her a seat of power. And I've talked to blacks. Most black leaders in the state want to resolve the difference. The battle in Mississippi, the racial battle, is over. And now we're getting down to nitty-gritty things that blacks are interested in, economic issues. And most blacks I've talked to now that the war is over, they want the wounds to be healed and work out ways where they can become part of the society, part of the government, and can enjoy the fruits of a growing economy.
But you're saying that the leadership of the loyalists right now prevents that?
Charlie Evans is ready to do it right. He'd do it tomorrow, from information I have. Now, I haven't talked to Charlie in a long time. From information I have, others said Charlie would do it tomorrow. He's a committed man.
Where does Waller fit into it?
Waller's a strange bird. I approached Waller in 1971, after his election, and in early 72, before the convention of 72. Urged him to sponsor legislation for us to elect our national committee man and committee woman. Alabama does it, other states. Put them on the ballot. We've had no effect with that convention because they'd have to go on the ballot the next general election. But also to have a preferential primary. At the last convention, even with a preferential primary, I don't know if we would have been seated or not. I doubt if we would have. I think the loyalists, even if they had gotten a small minority of the votes would still have been seated. But I think at the next convention, we would probably be seated if we had, if we would have a preferential primary. Walla, though, I don't know. Walla talks like he wants to do it, and then he goes into federal court, filed a suit against the party to try to get in. That's not the way to do it. You don't heal any wounds, you know, by going to court. And the court upheld the party.
So you don't see it being done?
Oh, I see it being done, yes.
When?
I can't tell you. The threat of the Republicans in the state before Watergate came along, we're moving the two together. I don't know, though, what the Republicans are going to be able to do the next election.
Well, Carmichael got 38% of the vote. And was it Phillips? He also got 38% of the vote for governor statewide. So there's some kind of a Republican base out there, or protest or something.
Here again, with Phillips, it's been a hard-fought Democratic primary. Phillips, I think, got that 38% you're talking about the first time he ran against Paul Johnson, didn't he? He got less than that when he ran 67. I think it was 63, he got 38%.
Yeah.
You had a very hard-fought Democratic primary between former Governor J.P. Coleman, who now sits on the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, Charlie Sullivan, a aspiring politician who later served as Lieutenant Governor, and Paul Johnson. There were a lot of scars. I think a lot of people went to the polls, and they were not voting for Rubel, they were just voting against Paul Johnson. Carmichael thing here again was in a presidential election year. A lot of blacks would not vote for Jim Eastman. Normally they would vote Democratic, but they would not vote for Jim Eastman. Then too, Jim Eastman waged a campaign. He had run on the culture of the individual and had run a Jim Eastman campaign. I think you would have seen a significant increase in his vote. His campaign was a Democratic Party campaign. Here he was running a Democratic Party campaign in Mississippi when you had Bill Karma, as I say, member of the House, supporting Trent Lott down there. You had John Bell Williams, who had just gone out of the governor's office, a Democrat supporting Thad Cochran here. You had Tom Abernathy, who had just retired from Congress, who despises the Democratic nominee, David Bowen, who's up there now. They didn't get along at all. You had McGovern and Shriver on the Democratic ticket. And at that time, Nixon was extremely popular in Mississippi, second only probably to Agnew. Agnew was awfully popular down here. Had been in the state, Agnew came into the state during the campaign. I don't think that was that 38% that Carmichael got, I don't think was indicative of Republicans.
But Agnew snubbed Carmichael, right?
He did snub Carmichael. I think, though, when he did it, it probably helped Carmichael.
Sympathy.
Carmichael played on it.
You say Eastman tried a campaign as a Democratic ticket. And from what I've read about that and talked to other people, most people consider that a failure. That is, he was unable to help other people get elected. Is that a change in Mississippi politics? Hasn't it been traditional in the past in some elections for the general election to campaign as a ticket?
In the general election, in our general election, when we have elected justice of the peace and supervisor in our state general election, it's very effective. You've got everybody all the way across. But in presidential election years, we only have the congressional candidates. Supervisors, the JPs, they hadn't been through an election, they're not exposed. I'm not sure that the Republicans might not make great strides, but the Republicans in Mississippi, the leadership of the Republican Party in Mississippi, has a kind of a tinge of the country club group to it. They only campaign with each other, and sort of a social club. Most of them are economically well fixed. some of them have espoused such things as the, and have spoken publicly of the abolition of the graduated income tax. Some real crazy things. I can't see the people of Mississippi who are voting on economic issues. I can't see them going along with the Republican leadership.
What do you mean by voting on economic issues?
Welfare. It's hard to relate that to the Republicans in the state, since really we've never had any real battles with them on economic issues.
How about among Democrats in primaries?
If they become a, you know, if they become a dominant party, we will get to some economic issues. Quite frankly, I don't think Republicans in this country have ever done a hell of a lot for those who can't help themselves. I don't think they've ever initiated any many new programs to help people who can't help themselves.
What kind of person do you think will be the next governor?
Hard to say. You know, Mississippi is, we deal so much in personalities here. There were no, the last gubernatorial race, there were really no real issues involved where the two candidates took issue. Primarily who could do the best job, who had the less scars.
Well, wasn't this running against the Capitol Street gang or whatever sort of at least an issue as far as images
were
concerned?
That was a campaign issue. That's not really an issue as such, but it was used effectively by Waller.
Basically, that was an appeal to the old populist tradition.
That's
it was an economic issue, and it proved.
Well, it was more than that. It was an appeal to the resentment that people feel toward Jackson out in the rural areas. Now, Waller interpreted it as being a populist movement.
But you're saying it was mostly a rural, urban sort of thing? Or outstate versus Jackson?
You had several things. You had this fellow, Charlie Sullivan, who ran, had made some former political leaders unhappy in the past. Jim Eastland, former Governor Paul Johnson, former Governor Ross Barnett. They all, Waller had no organization as such. They threw their organizations behind Waller. Waller was clean. One of the biggest splits we have in our state right now that touches a lot of our areas, goes right down to the grassroots, is private school versus public school. Some of our communities, we have some real hard feelings. The strange thing, Waller was able to get the majority of the black vote and get the Klan vote too. Crazy kind of thing.
Was it on that economic issue? I mean, on that image of being...
No real economic issue involved.
Well, was it the image? Was it the populist image?
Well...
The rural...
Dennis Walker came in here, handled Waller's campaign. First time we had the soft sell television approach. Waller never opened his mouth on television. It was a soft sell with Waller going through the crowd, real folksy, and a good pro voice in the background. It was a soft sell. He brought up some of the grievances of people, yet never irritated anybody, you know. He ran against the former administration. I was a part of it. Some of the mistakes that we had made, or some of the things, mistakes people thought that had been made, were brought to light. For instance, the little things hurt you, you know, in politics. They had built a $140,000 wall around the governor's mansion, brick wall, which people didn't like spending that kind of money for a wall around a house. Hell, most people in Mississippi don't even own a goddamn $140,000 house, you know. And then about 3 months after we built the wall, John Bell moved out of the mansion, said the mansion was unsafe for his family to live in. Well, this happened. He moved out about 3 weeks before the first primary. This hurt Sullivan. I thought it was going to hurt me. I was out camping. These are the little things that you never, you know, when you talk to people, you never hear about, but this is I think this was a significant.
Was John Bell supporting Waller?
No, he supported Sullivan. You ask about the next election, I can't tell you. What kind of governor will elect?
Does race have to be a factor?
Race is a factor. It's not the factor it used to be. The people in Mississippi, I don't think today want an extremist on either side of the race issue. They don't want race to become openly a part of the campaign. There are a lot of whites who still have segregationist sentiments in this state, but their children are going to school with blacks, with little black children. They don't want any more explosive situations because their children are right in the middle of it now. I don't think an extremist on either side will be elected next time. I think a man who is identified as going to promote the interests of the blacks to an extreme will not be elected. I think a man that tries to run on a anti-black, who has some anti-black, strong anti-black points to his background is going to have a hard time.
Well, let's assume that issue is out of there. At least it's a visible issue and everybody's fairly moderate. What become the issues then? Personality of the candidate.
Personality of the candidate.
Like what? I mean, what characteristics do you think they're looking for?
Well, it's a funny thing in Mississippi. I've just about come to the damn conclusion in our state that gubernatorial campaigns are like horse races. Folks just want to put their money on a winner. They want a winner. As soon as that race is over, hell, they start looking for the next race. And they approach it the same way a lot of folks bet on horses, without any logical reason. I don't see any issues right now. When I talk of issues, any issues that will be visible and that there will be strong disagreements between candidates, I think you're going to find everybody's going to be for motherhood, God, and country.
What about something like tax reform?
Tax reform could be. Tax reform could be. Although in Mississippi, since I've been around, the 20 years I've been around, somebody pick up an issue like tax reform, and if the other candidates see this catching, they all jump on the tax reform bandwagon, and it really never becomes an issue that's in contest with the candidates. I can remember in 1951, the first gubernatorial campaign I ever paid attention to. Paul Johnson was running. He was at that time considered to be a moderate or liberal. And he had advocated, at that time, I think our old age assistance was something like $18 a month. He advocated paying old age assistance for $50 a month. His opponent, Governor Hugh White, first said it would break the state, couldn't be done. Before you knew it, your wife was advocating $60 a month. You'd up the ante, you know. I know when John Bell Williams was elected, I was managing his campaign. The big issues were education and highways. But hell, everybody was falling, but who was going to build the most roads and who was going to pay the teachers the highest salary, you know. If the If Charlie Evers should run for governor again, he might could create some issues on getting back into the Democratic Party.
You mean for the general election or for the nomination?
For the nomination. I would think if he ran next time, he would run as a Democrat in the primary. You know, when he ran before for governor, he ran as an independent general election.